But not every tribe is worried. Victoria Diaz is from the San Pascual tribe in San Diego.
We're gaming, so if we don't get it from the government, we're going to get it from our gaming revenue.
But gaming revenue alone won't help most tribes, which is why many leaders spent time with federal officials and local lawmakers while in D.C. Even as these tribal leaders travel home, all eyes will remain on Washington budget talks. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Language educators hope to connect urban Alaska Native people with their traditional languages with the help from a new grant. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports.
People regularly ask Amber Thomas,
"Where can I learn my native language?"
Thomas is an education coordinator with the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and she didn't used to have an easy answer for that question. But now, the center's received a $200,000 federal grant to track down language resources in Anchorage and help match them up with prospective learners. The center's also trying to figure out which languages aren't being taught at all. Of the more than 20 Alaska Native languages, almost all of them are endangered, with a few surviving speakers. That's why, eventually, the center wants to start its own classes, teaching languages that aren't available elsewhere.
If we find that there are tons of resources for Inupiaq in Anchorage, and Yupik and Tsimshian, and there are no learners, then obviously those aren't the languages we want to start teaching.
They'd need extra grants to pull it off, but Thomas says the center can prove there's a need for more classes in Anchorage. After all, that's where more than a quarter of the state's Alaska Native population lives. And Thomas says that in the 2 weeks since she started surveying the city's Alaska Natives on the languages they'd like to learn, she's already heard from 300 people. The center can expect even more input in April when they hold a summit on Native language revitalization. And on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
During this month in 1980, the U.S. Postal Service issued a 19-cent stamp honoring Sequoia, the inventor of the Cherokee syllabary. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick Click Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction, scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's just 5 minutes and 45 seconds after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. And my first guest is here from the University of Alaska Southeast. Elizabeth Williams is one of the folks who works hard to bring us a health sciences curriculum here in Juneau. Tell us about your program.
Good afternoon, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
Hey.
I am delighted
to see you again.
Yes, nice to see you too. So officially, I'm the program coordinator for the Health Sciences Department at the University of Alaska Southeast, but I do the pre-health advising for students. So healthcare, high-demand jobs, in the next 10 years, there's a great outlook for a variety of different positions. And the University of Alaska Anchorage is considered the health college for the UA system, but they do provide programs kind of in an outreach model so you can still be in your community. So one of those programs is nursing. They offer the Associate's RN nursing degree here in Juneau, as well as the Associate's of Radiologic Technology. So UAS is a great place to get your prereqs, get advising, and we have programs that can get you direct entry into healthcare also, like we offer EMT-1 certification in the fall. And then every semester we offer the Certified Nurse Aid Training application, or not application, but program. It's one semester. It's 15 weeks, 140 hours of training. If you're successful, then you can sit for the state licensing exam and work as a CNA. And for anybody who is thinking about a healthcare career, this is a great entry into healthcare to get patient contact, working in a healthcare facility, as well as just kind of, you know, assessing if this is the right avenue for you.
On a previous program, I remember interviewing some CNA folks who were just on the verge of finishing the program, a couple of them and a couple others who were just on the verge of starting the program. They'd just begun.
Yep.
And the stories that the graduates were telling, two of them, I think, already had, the both of them already had work before they even finished the program. They were like,
yep.
Yeah, and they were working and they were planning that they would just move right on into those jobs for a while. And both of them, I think, were, well, at least one was planning on going on into nursing, so she would be going back to school.
Yes, many of the students who do the certified nurse aide class are nursing students, but we have pre-med students, occupational therapy students, just wanting to get that patient contact for a couple of reasons, to make sure that they want to work with people.
Mm-hmm.
And two, a lot of times when you apply to a health science program, generally how it works is that you have to get a series of prereqs completed before you can actually apply to the training program.
Prerequisite courses, yes, you have to take
you.
Before you,
prerequisite
you're ready
courses,
to take
sorry,
them
my lingo,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and so for like nursing, there's generally 2 years of prerequisite courses that include anatomy and physiology, some chemistry, psychology, and some other general education requirements. So when you get those done, then you're ready to apply, and they want you to have those completed because once you're in the program, they just want to focus on the actual nursing training, and they don't want to have to schedule your clinical around you going to English 111, something like that. So that's generally how all health programs work. You finish series of prerequisite courses, or you get a degree, and then you apply to the actual training program.
Yeah. And so you can do that, say you went through the CNA program and got qualified and got a job in town, you could actually do the rest of those prerequisite classes then as while you were working.
And a lot of students do that. They do the certified nurse aide class very quickly, are working, and then taking their prereqs. Some of them are doing it one at a time. Some are still going full time. So, and, you know, as a CNA, I mean, I would say Juno Pioneer Home and Wildflower Court are the largest employers of CNAs, but we've had some of our CNAs hired at Hospice and Home Care, Reach, Cornerstone Home Health, local doctor's offices have hired our CNAs and then trained them to be CMAs within their actual practice. So there's some branching out, and one of them got hired at the hospital. There's not a lot of those positions at the hospital, but they're kind of coveted. So there's a lot of opportunity, and you just don't have to work in assisted living.
So assume that you wanted to become a nurse, and the opportunity to use UAS is kind of like a jumping point, because we don't really have a program that leads totally to the nursing degree, do we, here?
We offer all of the prerequisites
yeah.
for the associate's and the bachelor's degree.
Okay. And then
absolutely.
If you want to have your bachelor's degree, do you go somewhere else?
So if you want to get your bachelor's in nursing, there's a couple of avenues. So
uh-huh.
you can finish all of your prereqs and you can apply directly to a bachelor's program. So in Alaska, the bachelor's program is offered in the Anchorage area out of UAA. And so, but there is another way, and it's if you finish your associate's degree, you can do what they call the RN to BS program. So you can finish the rest of your nursing classes distance on a pace that works for you.
Uh-huh.
So the School of Nursing is really trying to expand that program because a lot of the major hospitals in Alaska, especially in Anchorage, are looking more at a BSN model because they're going for this, what they call magnet certification.
Bachelor's BSN.
Bachelor's of Science in Nursing. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
okay.
But so you could get your associates, start working, getting experience, and if you wanted to finish your bachelor's degree, then there is an avenue for you to do that distance.
So how many students are currently in the program here?
So Juno, Sitka, and Ketchikan all have cohorts in Southeast, and Juno has 10, Ketchikan has 8, and Sitka has 8.
Mm.
And the reason, and they only accept every 2 years. And so the students attend classes via video conferencing at the Bill Ray Center, which is downtown. It's a university building. And they connect with other sites. So, like, Juno is with Homer and Kenai and Fairbanks. And so they take all of the classes together and connect via video conferencing that way. And then the students do all of their clinical work at Bartlett. And then in their third and fourth semester, they do have to travel to Anchorage for some advanced clinical experience that they can't get in Juno, like pediatrics, ICU, some psych, cath lab, which is the heart stuff. So, but they can pretty much get all the training that they want here. And that's kind of how the radiologic technology program works also.
Mm.
They accept 2 students every 2 years here in Juno and Ketchikan. And they attend their classes via video conferencing kind of on that same model with other sites, and then they do all of their clinical work at Bartlett. And then in the summer, they do clinical work in Anchorage to get the experience that they necessarily can't get here locally.
Now, your job as advisor, you've been doing that for a while.
Yeah, for 4 years now,
four
I guess.
4 years. Yep. So you've actually had time to watch some people who started the program and then moved on into the health field.
I have.
Can you give us some success stories here?
Yeah, so exciting. A couple of years ago, so they're going to be graduating this year. Two of my students, Misty and Mary, got into the dental hygiene program at UAA, which actually is a very, very competitive program, and it's one of the top ranked in the nation. And that was very exciting. And I have a cohort of students who are getting into the bachelor's program of nursing. Three of them have already been accepted, and they're waiting for their placements, and two of them are applying. And one of my students just got into the radiologic technology program here in Juneau, so she started this fall. And so I just met with her, and she's very happy. So, yeah, and so of the nursing students now, you know, I see them, and they're working towards their goal. And then when they graduate, it's so exciting. Like the class that just graduated, a lot of them actually went to work for local doctor's offices. So one is working for, I think, a pediatric doctor. Another one is working for a pediatric. One of them went to search. One of them went back to Washington. One of them moved to the MATSU. And the other one is working at Wildflower Court.
This is a wonderful success story. Assume that someone was interested. You only start cohorts every 2 years. When
yes.
is the next starting cohort?
So actually, this coming year is an application period for Juneau and Ketchikan. Mm. So the Juneau deadline is May 1st, and they rank it. They do it on a ranking system. So they look at the prereqs, have you completed those, and you get points for that. Do you have medical experience? You get points for that. And they also, there's a test called the PACS-RN, the Pre-Admission Registered Nurse Test, that gives you points. So application years, and then it's an application year for the Ketchikan RadTech program.
Okay.
Yep. And so, but, you know, there's other programs that students can be doing distance. A lot of people, when they think about healthcare, there's kind of actually five pathways for healthcare. There's therapeutic, diagnostic, HIM, which is health information management. There's support, and there's kind of biomedical, like where you do the research in a laboratory. And so a lot of the programs I have talked about are kind of the diagnostic, therapeutic. But there is a health information management program out of Sitka, which is very well run, highly accredited, and you can do that all distance for wherever you are. So if you live in Kotzebue, or if you live in Anchorage, or if you live in Juneau, you can do all of those classes distance and get a degree, and that's a very high-demand job. So an HIM is like when you go to the doctor and they give you that sheet and they circle a bunch of codes and then you give it to the person at the end. That person understands what those codes are, and they bill the medical insurance and things like that.
Elizabeth, you've sold the program absolutely. The phones are beginning to ring. Where should we forward the calls to?
So my number is 796-6128, and my email is eawilliams, the numerical 2, at uas.alaska.edu.
eawilliams2@uas.alaska.edu. Okay, cool. So anyone who's interested, just give you a call and
absolutely.
You can give them a lot more details.
Absolutely.
Hey, wonderful. Thank you so much for telling us about the program.
Thank you so much.
14 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to tell us about a program coming at, tonight?
Tomorrow
at the City Museum. Kimberly Naylor is back. She was with us on Tuesday. And her guest this time is Carol Sturgeluski. And Carol has written a book called The White House of the North.
I have.
Yeah, which is the story of our governor's mansion, which includes the wonderful tagline of a bigamist governor. I have to ask.
Everybody wants to know about that guy. You know, the darnest thing. It really sells books. Oh, dear.
So did you make it up?
No, I did not. I did not. And when I first learned about it, it was... I thought, gee, why isn't this in the history books? No, this was an early governor back in the days when a lot of people sort of built second lives for themselves. And, you know, it turned out that he had, and he wasn't actually a major in the U.S. military. In fact, he wasn't ever in the U.S. Armed Forces because, you know, he wasn't really a U.S. citizen.
Wow.
And then when he forgot to be a U.S., which means you cannot be a governor, by the way.
Yes.
And when he was neglecting to become a citizen, he also neglected to divorce his first wife, which came as a great surprise to those who knew and admired his
current
wife
living
in the governor's house. Actually, he was appointed, this was in the territorial days, when all our governors were appointed by the president. But, yeah, he left town rather quietly, but and by all accounts, was a very good governor.
Huh. Well,
you know, it's all kinds of fun stories and a lot of history. The house is 100 years old this year, and it just especially this week with the open house coming up on the 11th, it just seemed like a good time to work with the museum and.
Yeah.
Do a presentation. I have a lot of photographs.
So now that we've done that little headline on it, have you got a room big enough?
Yes, I hope so. Yeah, well, it'll be tomorrow morning from 10:30 to 12, and it's our copy and collection series.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol has some very interesting photos that she's going to be sharing with us, and she can speak more about that. But, yeah, we'll look forward to seeing people tomorrow.
Well, I was going through all the different photos that we used in the book and trying to pull some out for the presentation that dealt with the holidays and winter in Juneau. And I thought, gee, there's all these great photos that didn't make it into the book and some that I think people would really enjoy seeing. Perhaps they came in past our deadline or perhaps the quality was not good enough to reproduce. So I just grabbed a stack of photos that nobody, you know, has seen. They haven't, well, people have seen them, but they're all in one place. And it's everything from, you know, photos of the kitchen in the 1940s to, yes, Bill Egan in his Santa Claus suit. he used to dress up and go downtown and play Santa Claus on the streets, and nobody knew who he was, which he just took great delight in.
Carol, when you were putting the book together, you solicited photographs from people, or how did you acquire the photos that you?
Most of the photos came from the State Archives, the State Museum. The house has many photos and many files on the history of the building. And then when I would interview people, when I would talk to Mrs. Mm-hmm. Egan or to the Jeanette McLeod, whose mother was a housekeeper there for 25 years back in the during World War II and beyond. The Knowles family, the Hammond family, people provided pictures of their own. So there, we were really going for as few formal photos as possible, mm-hmm. more family scenes and pictures of the house being lived in.
Isn't that a wonderful process?
Yes.
I did that years ago when I did a history of Fairbanks for television, and we solicited photos from all over the country. And meeting the people and talking with them and having them produce these photos and tell you the stories behind them was just it was one of the high points of my life.
Well, and one of the great things about having done this book is I've been giving these presentations now, you know, down on the Kenai and in Anchorage and Juneau and whatnot. And afterwards, people will come up and say, oh, let me tell you my story. Or, what drives me crazy, oh, well, of course you have the story about...
No!
And why?
Where were you?
Yes. Can we do a second edition?
Well, that's the question is, are you going to? Do you think from those contacts and from that follow, will you do a revised edition?
I honestly don't know. I could, but...
Given enough material, you probably
given
could.
Enough material, yeah. And it really is out there. It's been a part of Alaskan history for 100 years, not just Juneau history, but Alaska history. And things have happened there, and people have gone through the house, and there's artwork, and there's furniture, and everything there has a story.
I think one of the appeals of the governor's mansion is that it's got class. You know, there's so much of Alaskan history which ain't got no class. and this does. This is like, you know, this is our White House, and it very much is kind of like the class deal.
Well, and when it was built, the doors opened to the public on January 1st, 1913, and the local press said, this is it. This shows that the rest of the country is finally taking Alaska seriously. It was the biggest building project, and it meant something.
Yeah, yeah. So 10:30 tomorrow.
10:30 tomorrow at
the
Juneau Douglas City Museum.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thank you to Heritage Coffee Company for providing the free coffee.
Well, thank you so much for coming down and alerting us to this possibility.
That's great. And I'll be at Hearthside tonight, too, also during the gallery walk. I'll be signing books.
Downtown or about?
Downtown,
yeah,
from
downtown.
5 to 7.
Okay. Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So
I
hope
good.
To see people.
So you're at Hearthside from 5 to 7 tonight, mm-hmm. and then coffee and collections at the museum tomorrow morning, 10:30.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Cool.
All right, thank you.
You bet. Here's our regular almanac.
And here is the writer's almanac for Friday. It's the 7th of December. 2012. It's the anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, 1941. 2,400 Americans died when Japanese planes attacked the fleet in Hawaii. A day which shall live in infamy, said President Roosevelt in his speech to Congress, which declared war on Japan the following morning, and it was the beginning of World War II. It was 40 years ago today. Apollo 17 astronauts took a famous photograph of Earth known as the Blue Marble, because that's what the planet looked like, a blue marble floating against black velvet space. The sun was at the astronauts' back, and so the planet is lit up. You can distinctly see blue and white and brown and green. You can see a cyclone forming over the Indian Ocean. The picture became a symbol of the environmental movement of the 1970s, taken from 28,000 miles away from Earth. It was the last time that astronauts were on a lunar mission. Since then, no humans have gotten far enough away from Earth to take a photograph like it. It's the birthday of Willa Cather, born near Winchester, Virginia, 1873, when she was a little girl. Family moved to their homestead in Nebraska near Red Cloud, and she gave up the woods and the hills and the meadows of Virginia for, she said, a country as bare as a piece of sheet iron. But she came to love Nebraska. She moved to New York City. She had a successful career as an editor of McClure's magazine, lived in a row house on Washington Square Park. After 10 years, quit the job so she could write full-time, and she wrote novels about the pioneer life of her childhood, O Pioneers and My Antonia and Death Comes for the Archbishop. And it's the birthday of Noam Chomsky, born in Philadelphia, 1928, the linguist who came out with the theory that there is an innate, instinctive impulse to language in the human brain, similar to flight in birds and swimming in fish. He wrote about it in his book Syntactic Structures, 1957. Here's a poem by Willa Cather on her birthday, a poem entitled Long Boy. Where are the loves that we have loved before, when once we are alone and shut the door? No matter whose the arms that held me fast, the arms of darkness hold me at the last. No matter down what primrose path I tend, I kiss the lips of silence in the end. No matter on what heart I found delight, I come again unto the breast of night. No matter when or how love did befall, 'tis loneliness that loves me best of all. And in the end she claims me, and I know that she will stay, though all the rest may go. No matter whose the eyes that I would keep near in the dark, 'tis in the eyes of sleep that I must look and look forevermore, when once I am alone and shut the door. Lawnboy, a poem by Willa Cather from her collection April Twilights, published by Amerion House and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances to art, food, wine, and culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar and edited by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:30. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting Juno Afternoon this afternoon. On this morning's newscast, there was an item which started out with this paragraph. Juno business operators say they weren't told the whole story when asked to donate items for an event at the Centennial Hall next week. And the story goes on to say that businesses various have been told that it's a holiday celebration, it's a party for kids, it's a benefit for local charities, or an event to honor local police and firefighters. The sponsors of the event said that school buses are being used to transport people to Centennial Hall from area schools, and some businesses have not been told that the prizes will be used to draw people to a 6-day religious revival. So we have asked the sponsor of this event, Regis McLeod Andrews, to join us, and he will be coming in by telephone, and interviewing him is Rosemary Alexander, the news director for KTOO.
And Regis, are you there?
Yes. This is Pastor Eric Gagnon with Revival Ministries International.
Oh.
And it's not Regis, Rosemary.
Oh, okay.
I'm with the ministry in Tampa that's actually coming in.
Well, that's great to talk with you, and we're glad to find out a little bit more about Juno
Sure.
Fest 2012. You know, since the posters have gone up and been delivered to residents' front doors around Juno, KTOO has been getting a number of questions, and people want to know just what is Juno Fest 2012. From our research, as Pat just said, it appears to be a revival meeting. Is that actually the case?
Well, it's two different things. In the morning meetings, it's called the Great Awakening. That is the religious event where, you know, it's a church event. It's where pastors and leaders come together in the morning. That was never advertised openly to the public. That's more of a church event for people that are, churchgoers. And then the evening event, which is called Juno Fest, is about the spirit of Christmas and about giving. And about, we personally as a ministry have purchased thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of gifts and prizes, and it's about keeping Christ in Christmas. So it's a great outreach to Juno to be a blessing to people. It would not represent anything like a church event that for people that go to church would have ever seen before.
Oh, I understand that Juno Fest is actually part of the Reverend Rodney Howard Brown's Great Awakening Tour, and you mentioned that's going to be happening in the morning. But the website, when we go to Great Awakening Tour and Howard Brown's website, says that he will actually be here and preaching every night from 7 to 9.
Well, we listed it on our website as 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. I mean, he will be there in the 10 a.m. meetings, and he will be there at the 7 p.m. meetings. We are a church. We are a ministry. And, you know, the Christmas message is about Christ, you know, Christ the Savior is born unto us. And Christmas is about giving, and it's about being a blessing. And, you know, I guess we never would have thought in a million years that a ministry coming in and giving, you know, most of all of these prizes, the iPads and the shuffles and the snow blowers and the gift cards and everything which we have purchased, you know, it's pretty shocking that people would be so upset about it. But I'm sorry if people did not realize, you know, we did put in our advertising Keeping Christ in Christmas, but this is not anything like a church event like people have ever seen. It'll be fun, games, bounce house, music, candy canes. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be Christmas music. It's going to be like a party. And then do we tell people the Christmas message? Absolutely. We tell them that Christmas is about Christ, and nobody has to be part of a church. Nobody has to be religious. Nobody has to pay for anything. Everything is free. And anybody that wants to come can come. We encourage people to come. If people do not want to come, then, you know, it's a free event. It's their choice.
Why not just put that on the posters and let folks know that this is the kind of event? It sounds to me like it would be like a church event that we go to at Christmas time. Why not just put that on the posters?
Well, because it's different. It's Keeping Christ in Christmas. I think that, you know, obviously says something right there.
But that's not listed on your poster. That's listed on an advertisement that is running on a commercial radio station. But we don't see it on the posters that are hanging all over town,
well,
or on the little front door hangers that have appeared on many people's front doors.
Do you have any of your flyers right there? Because our flyers say Keeping Christ in Christmas. Our posters say that. Now, our early ones, you know, we adapted our advertising campaign. Obviously, all of our radio, all of our television ads say that. And, you know, we spent a tremendous amount of money, pouring money into the community through radio and television that we paid for, which helped, you know, the community and jobs and what have you. And it's about Keeping Christ in Christmas. It is not your normal Christmas celebration where you come and sit down and, you know, the band or the choir sing six songs. It's a totally different thing. So for us to advertise it as a church event, it's not going to resemble that at all. We will tell the Christmas message, but it's not going to be anything like a church event. So that's why we didn't advertise it that way. And I apologize to anybody if anybody's upset, and if anybody feel that this was deceptive, I apologize to people. We're coming in to be a blessing to the community at a great, great expense to the ministry, which we have no problem doing at all.
How much money have you spent on these gifts so far? How much money is the ministry itself?
Well, we're giving away over $25,000 worth of gifts and prizes. We've purchased iPads. We've purchased many gift cards. We have something called Bill Pay.
Yes, we've seen a lot of those listed. Where does the money come from for your ministry?
Some donations from people through our ministry and around the world.
And we also understand that a number of businesses have been asked if they would just donate to this event.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I am familiar with that.
And so when you ask people to give contributions, how are you characterizing Juno Fest at that time?
Well, the spirit of Christmas, the spirit of giving, and that we're coming to be a blessing to the community. That's the way we did it. Any business that wanted to donate can, and several have, and I think that's great for the community.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so if any business doesn't want to get involved, they don't need to. We opened it up that we're having a great giveaway for those in need. There's several people that are going through a tough time. We are in a recession. People can't afford their bills. People can't afford to buy their children proper gifts. So, you know, many businesses that have been blessed in Juneau, you know, and they're doing well. If they wanted to sew into a giveaway, which costs nobody anything, nobody has to buy anything. There is no obligation for anybody. Uh-huh. Nobody has to believe in Jesus Christ. Nobody has to do anything other than show up, and it's totally free.
We also understand that this is an event to honor the police and firefighters, and you're actually giving them rifles and handguns?
Well, we have offered the police. We have brand new. Yes, that's true. We want to honor the police and the firefighters. They are not officially...
They're not sponsoring
this. Sponsoring the event. Or,
right.
No.
Right, we know that.
We want to pour into the firefighters and the police department that are doing such a great job there. And we do have these items. If they decide to take them, they're free. We'd be more than glad to give them to them. And that's what we're doing because we want to honor them.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that some of your advertising now says keeping Christ in Christmas or putting Christ in Christmas, and that's exactly what Christmas is all about. But it sounds to me like perhaps your advertising changed last week. I know we had some folks here who brought us posters and talked about it on our program then, but there wasn't any indication that the advertising was going to change, and I have heard on a commercial radio station putting Christ in Christmas, but still, again, the posters that I see around town and the ones that were left at our station don't indicate that at all. So I guess I'd just like to ask one more time, why not put that wonderful message, Christ in Christmas, on the poster and on the radio and out in the open so that people who are donating and people who think they would like to come to this know exactly what it is?
Well, you know, I would say most of all of our advertising has used the spirit of Christmas and keeping Christ in Christmas. I believe I might be wrong on this because I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe all of our TV, a high percentage of our radio and newspaper ads ran within the last 7 to 10 days, which that is, you know, the heaviest part of our campaign, all said that. So, I mean, just like any campaign, I mean, you change the colors of your ad and different things as you get closer so it just doesn't blend in. But, you know, once again, the motive behind this whole thing, I mean, can you imagine we could have picked any city? Pastor Sam is a good friend of the ministry. He told us of the needs in Juneau and what was happening. And he rented Centennial Hall out of his own money, out of his own ministry. And we said, you know what, if you're going to do this, we want to come in and be a blessing. We want to come in and pour as much as we possibly can in. And that is the true motive of the whole thing.
Okay.
Nobody's going to come to the meeting and then all of a sudden there's some trickery to where we're all going to try to get their money or charge them for the gifts or anything. So
okay.
If people want an opportunity, we're going to pull numbers out of a hat. Everybody gets a ticket, different age groups for kids and stuff, and we'll pull a number out. Nobody pays for anything. And if they want to have fun and come out and celebrate this, you know, Christmas, then come on out. If they don't, then I'm so sorry that people are upset. We're actually pretty shocked, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And this is all part of Rodney Howard Brown's Great Awakening Tour, I understand, just quickly because we're running out of time. But can you explain that Great Awakening Tour and how that's going to work here?
Well, the Great Awakening Tour is in the morning in the church event. And then what we do on our Great Awakening Tours is not normally a six-night event, but on one night or one day, we usually get as much toys and gifts and prizes, and you know, we even try to we get money to pay for, you know, it would be cash for people's electric bills and different things. We get as much as we possibly can, and we have an event one day. It's not called Juneau Fest, but it would be called Block Party or something, and we give away all of this for free into a community that's in need. And that is part of the Great Awakening. It's totally separate than the church meeting. It is normally never done in a church. It's usually done in a community that is in need. Now, it's hard to do that up there because it's so cold. So that's why when Pastor Sam wanted to do this event at Centennial Hall, we decided to do it inside at night, which is totally separate than the church meeting in the morning. We truly want to be a blessing, and I'm sorry that the whole deal's turned out this way. I think when it's said and done, a lot of people are going to get a lot of nice things and going to be blessed and see that Christmas is about giving and Christmas is about Christ.
Absolutely, it is. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate you being on our program today.
Hey, Rosemary, thank you for your time, and sorry for any problems here. We just really want to pour into Juneau, and we want to come up there and be a blessing. That's it.
Perhaps not problems, but certainly confusion. Thanks so much.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. God bless America.
You've been listening to our news director, Rosemary Alexander, interviewing the pastor who is in charge of the event coming up on December 9th through 14th at Centennial Hall called JunoFest 2012. This is Juno Afternoon.
The Association of Alaska School Boards is proud to support Getting to Graduation as it airs on KTOO and 360 North on December 10th. The mission of AESB is to advocate for children and youth by assisting school boards in providing quality public education focused on student achievement through effective local governance. For more information, find them on the web at www.aasb.org.
Minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon, and I have a studio full of skaters, and that's a wonderful and exciting thing to have happen. With me are Laura Ballstead, Catherine and Meredith Fritch, Emma Jeffson, and Gabby, is it Shen? Sean?
Sloan.
Sloan, okay, Gabby Sloan. Okay, and you are all going to be in a show here, and you did something up in Whitehorse, is that right?
Yeah, on Whitehorse.
Yeah, okay. Who was that that just said that? Say your name to these folks on the radio.
Hi, I'm Lori.
Okay, you're Lori. All right. So what were you doing in Whitehorse? You were competing in some kind of competition up there?
Yeah, we competed in a lot of different events. There were four events, I think. There was a creative event where we made up a program to music that we've never heard. And there was an interpretive event where we interpreted music. There was a competition where we just did out and we skated two programs that we had practiced many times before. And there was an elements program where we practiced and showed individual elements. So, for example, they might tell me that I have to do a double jump. So I'd practice my double jump and then I would show it to them.
Lori, this sounds like the Olympics.
Almost.
Almost.
Well,
okay.
It was international.
It was international. So you had Canadian organizations. Who just said that? You are.
This is Pam Leary, and I'm the figure skating coordinator for the Juneau Skating Club.
Okay.
And I accompanied these girls on a crazy ferry ride over to Whitehorse last Friday, and we had a great time. We competed, these five girls, in 15 different events all told, and we brought back 6 golds, 5 silvers, and 2 bronze.
Outstanding. Yeah. Anybody here win a gold? Yeah, all right. So let's see. That's you're Emma, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Emma, what would you say was the best part of your trip to White Horse?
Well, I got to compete, and it was really fun.
And you won a gold, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did somebody put the medal around your neck, and did you get to stand up and...
Yeah.
Yeah, in front of everybody? Cool.
Yeah.
What did you win it for? What event did you win in?
I won it for the elements.
For the elements. Ooh.
And
so you must...
I also won one for the creative and the competition.
So you must be a really precise skater. You can just put it right where you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long have you been skating?
For almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years. That's a lot of your life that you spent on blades, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So, let's see. Catherine and Meredith Fritsch, sisters?
Mm-hmm.
I think so, since we look a lot alike. Yeah. So, Catherine, what was your favorite event?
Event?
Yeah. What did you like best?
Oh, I like that we got an assessment and we weren't ranked against each other.
Oh, okay.
And that's something that they do in Canada that is different from some of the competitions we do here. They just started it this year, so it was new for us as well as them. So for the lower-level skaters that you wouldn't see normally on the TV, such as our skaters, they do their competitive program, and then the judges assess them. And so they get golds or silvers or bronzes based on how they do, based on the elements in their program.
So, Meredith, have you been in competitions here and then the one in White Horse?
Yes.
Is it a lot different?
Yeah, because in White Horse, you get your own personal score, and you're judged against yourself. And also, you won't automatically get gold if you're the only one competing in your group in your star program, because if you fall a couple times, they'll judge you bronze, silver, or gold.
Yeah. Did you fall?
No.
No. You got it under control, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long have you been skating?
6 years.
6 years. Wow. And you must like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where do you skate? Where do you practice?
Treadwell Arena.
Treadwell. How often?
4 days a week.
4 days a week. Wow. This is dedication. Yeah. All of you? Everybody practices 4 days a week? Wow. This is something. So, Gabby Sloan, are you going to perform here as well?
No? Yeah.
So we'll see you on the ice here.
Yeah.
When is when is that holiday recital? Do you have the dates?
On Sunday.
Sunday. Okay. What time?
It starts at 2:30, actually. The doors open at 2 because we're going to have a dessert auction, and the skating will start at 2:30. So we invite everybody to show up early.
Okay. And are all of you going to skate in this in the recital?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Are you doing the same stuff that you did, like, for your creative in White Horse? Are you doing that here?
No.
We're doing a recital.
Oh, okay.
I actually am doing my interpretive piece that I did at White Horse, so, yeah.
Okay. And you've been, in addition to going up to White Horse and competing in this competition, you've also been preparing the stuff for this recital in those 4 days a week that you're on the ice. How long do you practice each time?
Roughly like 9 to 10 hours a week. So 2 to 3 hours a day, maybe.
2 to 3 hours a day. Do you have time for anything else? What else?
School.
How do you just school and
homework.
Skate, right?
What
school
else
and
do
skate.
You guys do?
School and homework. We do homework and
dance.
Somebody play some music.
Dance and
the flute.
Piano.
Flute.
And violin.
And piano.
Play
interesting. Wait a minute. I think I'm in a room full of talent here.
That would be correct.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Let's see.
Yes.
I think I got all of these questions that were kind of, that we sort of think. So I think what I want to ask is, do you think you'll keep doing this?
Yes.
You're going to skate the rest of your life?
Kind of.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Pam, do you teach them to skate? Are you like a coach as well?
Yes, I'm the coordinator as well as I do private lessons with these girls as well as our group basic skills classes.
So, say you were like, an adult like Pam. Do you think you'll ever go into like doing the same thing she's doing? Would it be fun to teach a bunch of kids like you how to skate?
Yep. I help them sometimes, and it's pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazingly wonderful thing to watch. I've tried to skate a couple of times, and for me, the past tense of skate is have fallen, so I'm not good at it. But do you have to have special skates to do the things that you do?
Yeah.
You have to have toe picks.
You have to have toe picks? Does that mean those little jaggy things on the ends that you use to stop and turn?
Yeah, because that's what you use to jump.
And then most of the time.
And then it helps you on your spins.
Oh, okay. Does it take when you first started this? You were all probably pretty young. No, okay. Who like you? You started real.
I started when I was like 8 or 9.
When you were 9? Okay.
I started when I was 6.
When you were 6, okay. And how about you?
I was 3 when I first set foot
3.
On ice.
Okay.
All right. I was also 3.
Okay. These are the sisters. They were taken out there together. Okay. Yes. Okay. Who started you out? Did your parents say, do you want to skate? Or did you see some skating and say, I want to do that? Or how did that work?
I don't remember because it was
one. Yeah, you were only 3, yeah. how about you?
For me, my class went skating.
This is Lori.
And then my friends were all skating. And then I actually saw these world championships when I was on a trip. And that really was interesting to me. So that's kind of how I started.
I started that year that I was watching the Olympics, and I said that I wanted to try it.
And your folks said, far out. Let's find some ice, right? Yeah. So is the gear expensive? Do you know?
Yeah.
They are expensive. Really, quite expensive. A lot of the dresses can cost $600 maybe.
Or above.
And skates. I just got a new pair of skates, and they were probably around 1,000-ish, maybe, at most.
Those were custom boots, though. Yeah. Lori's at a much higher level now, and so she's getting into custom boots.
Yeah, but still.
The lower-level boots aren't as much.
But
they're still very expensive.
Once you get good, then, you know, it just becomes the thing that you do, right? And it's like half your life or more. Somebody, I remember a thing that a tightroper once said. He said that when you're on the rope, then he's alive. And the rest of the time is just waiting to get back on the rope. I don't know if they're quite to that level, but I imagine that skating is really an exciting part of your life. You all like doing this, don't you? Yeah, you must. If you put in 4 hours a week and have expensive costumes like that. Lori, by the way, is wearing her skating costume. Did you just come for practice? To this? Oh, just...
We're going to practice.
You're going to practice. Okay. All right. So, one more time then. When is the event?
December 9th, this Sunday at 2:30.
At 2:30, and it's at Treadwell.
And you can also go to our website, which is www.junoskatingclub.org, or call the Treadwell Arena, or go visit the Treadwell Arena, and they can give you information as well. And I also want to mention that our Session 3 for Basic Skills Group classes will be starting up the week of January 7th, right after the holidays. So everybody should come down, watch the holiday recital, look at the great things you can do if you learn how to skate, and maybe join us for some lessons.
Yeah, sounds like a terrific opportunity. Thank you. Thank you very much, girls,
and
for coming.
And I will say that the recital is free.
Oh, even better. Yeah. Even better. Wow.
Please come and watch us.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Say that. Everybody say that. Say what she just said.
Please come and watch us.
We've pulled a lot of our incidental music today from an album which is recently released called The Goat Rodeo Sessions. It's a deluxe edition of an earlier album that was released with Yo-Yo Ma, Stuart Duncan, Edgar Meyer, and Chris Tile. And this is the deluxe edition. It includes a wonderful DVD of some of their recording sessions and some of their conversations about their music. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area in the Valley and Auk Bay. You can hear us on K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. In Mahuna, we're on K220 BT at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, we're on K210 AS. It's at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI cable. Juneau, we're on digital channel 871. KRNN is on digital channel 872. And one up from that on 873 is KXLL. We're also online all day at www.ktoo.org. Listen to our stream. There's a Juneau School District Board of Education work session. They are listening to the board candidate interviews. It's scheduled for Monday, December 10th from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. It's in the Marie Drake Room, room 313. Pat Moore, your host. Thank you very much for listening to Juneau Afternoon today, and stay tuned for All Things Considered.